Welcome to Man Strong Podcast. This is your host, Clint Locklear, and I'm going to do a show today that's going to cover a couple different things, and I hope you enjoy it. One is going to be when you get injured, not just from lifting weights or from, you know, tweaking your back when you go out and you're pulling a deer because it's deer season or something like that, but when you physically have an injury. Just some things from a non-doctor that listens and have done a lot of research on this, and I'm going to explain why this is important to me right now, is so it doesn't get worse. And when you listen to a lot of doctors today, they are actively going to have it get worse. But you need to keep in mind, most doctors today are trying to get people well enough to go back in their cubicle and use a computer so they can go back to work. If you're going to be a functional human strong male, that may not be the best for you. I'm going to play a short clip of something here in a second after we do our sponsors. Guys, this is not a show for children, because if none of my shows are really for children. I am not a children book teller. I do not tell children stories. I do not think like a children. I don't have children. That's not in my way of thinking. And I know a lot of people, especially on my other podcast, you know, they say you shouldn't say things like that because you're a role model. Guys, I'm not a role model. I'm just a dude that struggles through life like anybody else, tries to figure things out like everybody else. And I'm a huge researcher, and I go down rabbit holes, and I try to figure stuff out, and I come up with different things. And that's what we talk about. So on some of these subjects that we talk about on Man Strong, it's not for children. That depends, I guess, on if how and what type of content you don't mind your children listening to, which is varied differently today than it was, say, 15, 20 years ago or when I was a kid. And that's up to the parent. Before we do, though, I want to thank our sponsor, which is Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. They're out of Iowa. Alan's a good friend of mine. I'm getting ready to see him here shortly, spend some time with him, really looking forward to it. He has a full line of trapping supplies. He's got an amazing line of predator calls, guys. It's the sound that his makes and the price that they are and the quality is pretty mind-blowing. He also has dust for fishing, he has scents for hunting, copper trap tags that are great for if you're going to run jugs and trout lines for catfish, and make neat necklaces, all kind of different things you can do with copper trap tags. I actually had a rock band years ago that had their name and a little saying from their rock band on a copper trap tag. And they bought these cheap little, like necklaces, like dog tags would come on, and they gave them out to the fans at the concerts, and the people loved them and wore them all the time. So you can get creative with trap tags, because you can put quite a bit on there. It's usually three or four lines with so many letters. You can go to Funky Trap Tags and see the specifics, but it just doesn't have to be for traps. He's a good company to deal with. He's a quality company to deal with, and he's an honest company to deal with. So if you're looking for someone in that area, you owe it to yourself to give Funky Trap Tags and Supplies a shot. Now, what you're getting ready to hear is just one of these things. Oh my word. When you listen to this, it's kind of meant as comedy, and it's kind of meant as how hypocritical the world is to men over women today. And when you really sit back and think about it, it's sad. I'm always amazed if a guy's short, and say short, say whatever that means to you. I'm 6'2". I've never fell into this category. I don't know what it's like to be 5'6" and a male and trying to date women. But when I hear consistently that women want guys that are 6 foot tall, have 6 inches, and make six figures. That's kind of like, they may change that up a little bit, but that is straight across the board. Because a bigger guy, psychologically, down deep in the lizard brain of a woman, is probably going to be a better protector and secure of assets than a small person. Now, what does that mean if you're a smaller guy? That's rough. I mean, there's nothing you can do about your height. It's not like you can train it. It's not like you can, you know, you might get a quarter inch or something if you hang upside down all the time. I don't know. But it's pretty rough. But at the same token, it's okay for a woman to categorize men as small, but if you categorize women in any other way, watch how quickly they come unglued. Like weight. So if someone's getting on to, you know, their preference is a man that's 6 foot tall or taller, and you ask them how much they weigh, watch how the tables turned, and the person that asked about the weight is the Philistine at the gates trying to destroy women. So just listen to this and let this sink in, because it's pretty creative.
Look at this girl talking about how much she loves sex. She says she's a nympho. What a freak. That's hot.
Look at this dude talking about how much he loves sex. He says he's a nympho. What a pervert.
Oh, look at that woman chasing that baby. She looks like a really good mom.
Hey, look at that man chasing that baby. You think we should make sure it's actually his? He might be a predator.
Girl, it don't matter if you agreed. He should have known better than to have sex with you while you were drunk. That's taking advantage of you.
Dude, it doesn't matter if you were both drunk. It doesn't matter if she agreed to have sex with you. You took advantage because you're the man.
He got mad and called you a bitch and then threw something? He needs to control his temper.
So she got mad, called you a bitch, and then threw something? What'd you do to piss her off?
Congratulations on your divorce. Girl, it's been 6 years of him not doing good enough for you. I'm so glad you're starting to see your real worth. It's time to put your own needs first.
I can't believe you would divorce her. It's been 6 years. There is no excuse for abandoning your family like that. Are you afraid of lifelong commitment? I hope you're ready to pay up.
All girls are bi. In fact, most girls are probably lesbian. That's normal. Girls are hot.
Dude, did you just say you're bi? So you're gay?
She hit him because she was scared.
No, he didn't touch her. No, he didn't say anything mean to her. It just, she was scared. He was scary. She had every right to hit him. It doesn't matter what she did, bro. I don't care if she was yelling in your face. I don't care if she hit you. I don't care if this bitch was coming at you with a taser. You don't put your hands on a woman. You don't hold her down. She's not an animal. So what does she do for work? Oh, she's a stay-at-home mom? Well, that's cool. She's putting her children first. So what does he do for work? He's a stay-at-home dad? Is he too lazy to work? What a deadbeat. No, I understand. You don't want to date him because he's fat. You're allowed to have standards. You're attracted to what you're attracted to. You don't want to date her just because she's fat? Dude, you're a shallow pig. What you got there, girl? 6-speed vibrator? Ooh, girl, where'd you get that? That's hot. What you got there, dude? 6-speed pulsating vagina. That's fucking pathetic. You can't get laid, can you? You've literally been watching Netflix for 7 hours straight. Is that show really good? Maybe I should watch it. You've literally been playing Call of Duty for 7 hours straight. You got a fucking problem, dude. You need to go do something. There's nothing wrong with posting 200 selfies. You like the way you look. You should be proud to show it off. Why are you posting 200 selfies? You look like a narcissist. You are not that hot. Oh, big girls can be models too. We're looking to represent and celebrate all body types. You want to be a model with that beer gut? No. Come back when you have a six pack. Your body, your choice. I get it, y'all were together. You didn't rape her, she consented to have sex with you. That's your baby. But it's not your choice. You have no say in the matter. Back in 2020, she was convicted of child molestation. They sentenced her to 30 years and gave her a $100,000 bond. Back in 2020, he was convicted of child molestation. They sentenced him to 75 years and gave him a $1,500,000 bond.
Yes. And the person that did that actually looks to be about 20 years old. A lot of the stuff that I'm seeing, it's interesting how now females are going, you know, maybe the way that we're looking at men is a little backwards. And I think it has a lot to do with a lot of men today, if you look at a lot of surveys and studies and statistics, are looking at women and go, you're not worth the effort. You better be super special before I take a chance on having a relationship with you. And I think a lot of women are trying to figure this out, just like a lot of men are scared to even think about trying to figure it out. But just a little bit of the hypocriteness that goes on, that's even a word, hypocrisy, when it goes on between men and women, just to kind of think about a little bit. All right, I want to talk about being injured. Now, the reason I'm saying this is I'm going through something right now that I would say here in about another week or two, I'll probably have to break down and go to the doctor. Now, what happened to me, I have no idea. I didn't fall. I didn't dislocate my shoulder. I wasn't in a car wreck. I didn't have a training accident in the weight room. There was nothing that felt like it ever snapped. There was nothing that hurt in the weight room. There was nothing. What I started feeling was my shoulder started feeling a little unstable when I was doing pressing exercises, bench press, overhead incline, stuff like that. At the same time, I had a nerve that was running from my spine across about my middle trap above my scapula. I could feel that line of nerve going into my shoulder, and then I could feel a nerve that was going right on the outside of my tricep between the bicep and the tricep. Now, it took about 4 or 5 days for me to realize this may be something normal than just a tweak. Now, I've got a very unstable shoulder, and I don't know why. And the inner part of my chest does not contract. The muscle itself is actually looks like it's going into atrophy. I don't know if it's not getting blood. I don't know if it's a nerve thing. I believe it's a nerve thing. And my outside of my tricep, again, will not contract with any strength whatsoever. So if you touch one tricep and I'm tensed up, it's very hard. And the other one is kind of like a muscle that is the opposite of tense. It's there. It's kind of like jello, I guess. I don't know. So I started doing research. What in the world is this? So apparently I have damaged my shoulder doing something. The only thing I can come up with in my head, guys, is I went off a cycle of going very heavy on bench and overhead press. We had a small thing at the gym. The guy was trying to promote the gym, and he had a PR day. So me and Brett, we went in there and we maxed out on bench. I got 370. I think Brett got 380. No pain whatsoever. Nothing. Well, we worked pretty hard up to that point. So I was going to take, you know, a couple of months and just do some volume work and stuff like that. And, you know, let everything recuperate, calm back down before I started going heavy again. Cycling heavy and cycling not heavy. Just common sense training. Well, I've been doing all those presses, and I was up at Roco Gym, and I decided I was going to do a chest day on cables with a bench. So I did 4 sets of flat flies with cables, nothing crazy. 4 sets of incline with cables, nothing crazy, and 4 sets of decline. So 16 total sets for the chest, working up heavier each time. And it seemed like about a week after that, I started noticing what's going on with me. Well, I've read a lot of books on training. I've watched a lot of videos on training. I listen to podcasts on training. And I listen to podcasts more from people that's been in the weightlifting game for like 20, 30 years. Not the little frat boys that are running around with their shirts off with very, you know, with 13-inch arms telling you how to get your gains. I'm not interested in their information because they don't have any information. They have no experience to go with anything that they say. But when I go and I listen to old powerlifters, strongmen, bodybuilders, when it comes to injuries, and they all have the same thing, which I'm getting ready to say is I'm not a doctor and I'm not giving doctors advice on this because I'm not. There's a common factor that guys that do a lot of training seem to all have in common, which goes completely against what the doctor is going to tell you when you have an injury. What does the doctor tell you if you have a hurt shoulder? Stop using it. Don't lift weights. Don't lift anything over 20 pounds. Don't raise your arm. Don't do this. You have knee injury. Stay off of it. Yada, yada, yada. You have an ankle injury. You have a back injury. You know, don't lift over 20 pounds. Don't do anything that's strenuous. Basically, they say, don't do anything and let's see what happens. On the guys that train a lot and have been injured a lot, because if you're a world-class power lifter and you're taking your body to the full genetic potential of your strength, which is not what I do. I'm nowhere near the genetic potential of my strength. I see no reason or health reasons to ever go anywhere near that. I'm not a competitor. But these guys push and push and push. So if you listen to a lot of them, almost all of them had shoulder injuries at one time or another, tendonitis in their elbows, some knee issues, probably hip issues, ankle issues. And we're not talking catastrophic injuries where they blow their kneecap off when they're trying to squat 1,200 pounds or something. When I started listening to what they're saying, and one of the first person I heard saying this was Louis Simmons, and I've read it in a couple of his books, is when you have an injury, you give it a few days rest, but you don't give it too much more after that. Because it gets worse. Now, this made a lot of sense to me. When I was a freshman in high school, I was a defensive end at Meigs County High School. I was on the strong side, and we were playing a scrimmage game, and they ran a reverse. So if you're not into football, the quarterback hands off to one guy, he runs the other side of the field, but somewhere in the middle of that, he flips it to a guy that's running back to the other side of the field. It's kind of a trick play. It's really not. But anyway, the defensive end, which was me, his job is very simple when you play football. You contain the edge. You don't let anything get outside of you, and you force them inside where you got help to tackle. That's a defensive end's job. So I'm a freshman playing this scrimmage game. I see this reverse happening. I step up 3 or 4 yards to guide him to go back to the middle instead of trying to continue to make it all the way to the sidelines. Well, he doesn't see me because he's looking at a linebacker that's tracking him behind the line of scrimmage. Me being Clint, being a little bit aggressive, being young, I'm like, he doesn't see me. I'm going to take his head, slap off his shoulders. So in about 15-yard sprint, I go as fast as I can, and I'm going to level this dude in the backfield. He doesn't see me. He doesn't see me. He doesn't see me. Right when I go to lower my shoulder, he must have saw me out of his peripheral vision. His eyes got as big as saucers. I can remember to this day. He jumps backwards away from the line of scrimmage, just like what would happen if you saw a car was about to hit you. You just lunge backwards. All my momentum's going one way. All his momentum is going another way. And I see that I'm not going to have contact with my shoulder pads, so I reach out to grab him. My fingers, back when I was in school, a lot of the jerseys had these great big holes in them all over the place. You know, for air conditioning, I guess. Well, I grabbed a hold of that jersey. My fingers got caught in that. My body's going one way. His going the other way. My shoulder goes out of socket and comes back in somewhere around my nipple. Bad dislocation. Well, we go to the hospital. We get to put it back in. I'm kind of freaking out because when they took the shoulder pads off, I about threw up because my shoulder's not supposed to be there. We go to the doctor in a couple of days. He puts me in a sling. I think it was for 12 weeks, could be 8 weeks. Me being a freshman's a long time ago. I will never remember, or I will never forget, the two feelings I had when we took that sling off. One was elation. I got to where I hated that sling. I was not allowed to raise my arm off of my body for that 8 to 12 weeks. And then the thing that I remember that blew me away was I could not raise my arm off my body after 8 or 12 weeks when the sling was off. I physically, no matter how hard I tried, the shoulder, the muscles in my left shoulder, which is not the one that's injured now, would not work. It took about a week for me to be able to raise it 4 or 5 inches. Took several more weeks for me to get it where it was at shoulder height. It took several weeks after that before I could get it above my head, and it was super weak. My arm and shoulder were physically, obviously smaller than my right side. I couldn't do anything with it hardly. Looking back on that now, excuse me, I've had bad sinuses. Looking back on that now, I realize the mistake of putting that sling on. I allowed something that was bad to get worse. Now, why does a doctor have you put the sling on? Let it rest, recuperate, regenerate, tighten back up. All this stuff he said, I totally get all that. But you also have to keep in mind, a doctor, when you go see a doctor, gives a general piece of advice for the average person across the board. Young, old, fat, skinny, strong, weak. It doesn't make any difference. And it's always going to be the advice that's going to make him less culpable if anything goes wrong as far as a lawsuit. That's also a fact in medical care in America. But I let my shoulder and my arm go to complete atrophy because I had it in that sling. When I listen to other guys that have had injuries that are, we're talking world class, you know, they're benching 600-700 pounds, they're pulling 800-900 pounds off the floor, and they're, most of them are squatting over 1,000 pounds. The difference of what they do and what the doctor says to do is radically different. Now, I'm going to step back a little bit. When we first moved to the lake, everything here is on an angle because there's nothing flat here. Appalachian Mountains, on the lake, there's nothing flat. I picked kind of the flattest spot we had. It wasn't flat. I thought it was a good idea because I'm used to doing it. When I was in Dunlap on flat ground, I had like 425 pounds. I was doing farmer's carries with implements. Okay, not a big deal, done it before, did it again. This time it felt kind of funny. What I didn't take into consideration is when you're on an angle, all that weight's going to go to the outside joint, which was my left knee. And I tore my meniscus. Not completely, but slightly. What's the doctor's advice? Immobilize it. Is that what I did? No. I kept doing things with my knee to the point where it would become uncomfortable, then I would stop. I kept bending my knee, I kept putting pressure on my knee. I wasn't doing squats or something like that, not for a while, but I kept it moving. I kept blood flow in there. Lo and behold, now I don't have a knee problem. even though I tore a meniscus. I did not have surgery. And now I can't tell the difference between one knee to the next. So go back to now. I've got a shoulder injury. What do professional athletes do? And what do professional athlete trainers tell them to do when they have an injury? If you have a shoulder injury, the interesting thing is it's not being immobile. First thing they do is they put them right back on a bench with a broomstick. And they make them do repetitions with a broomstick, if they can. And they'll make them do like 5 sets of 20. What does this do? It keeps your muscles going in their normal range of motion instead of being immobile. It also puts blood, which is how your body heals itself, it puts blood where it needs to be on that joint, on that tissue, and it goes away. And then it takes, didn't go away. It takes the nutrition and the blood flow, and it actually allows yourself to heal much faster. After the broomstick, they go to an empty bar, which is 45 pounds. Then they may go to 5 pounds on each side. And then they go to, you know, 10, then 20s, then 45s. Lo and behold, someone with an absolute destroyed shoulder within 3 months is benching 300 or 400 pounds again. If they would have done what the doctor was going to tell them to do and keep it immobile, it would be a year or more before they could even come close to doing that, and they would probably never trust it. So what am I doing to my tricep? Every day, it doesn't matter, I do single arm tricep pushdowns with a 10 pound weight on a cable. And actually by rep 17 or 18, that gets pretty tough. And if I'm doing an arm day, when I go over and do my left arm, which is not injured, I've got like 70 pounds on there. So I've got 10 pounds on my gimpy arm, and I've got 70 pounds on my good arm. I do those reps, and I come back, and I do this. But even days I'm not doing any tricep work, I go out, I do 100 controlled, contracting the best that I can, repetitions with my tricep that does not want to function correctly. Because of my shoulder, I've looked up all kind of exercises that work on stability. Some I can do, some I cannot. One I can do is bench press a bar, 45 pounds, 100 times every day. Every day. If I don't do that, the injury will, I personally am going to be making that injury worse. Now, I had a friend that's probably going to listen to this show that had a knee issue for several years. What did he do? The natural thing that most people do. He babied it. He had to get on ladders a lot. He would do this shuffle thing where the weight was always on his good leg and not his bad leg. And I'm like, dude, you got to strengthen that. You got to get some blood flow in that. And eventually, he thought about what I said. So when he went up a ladder from that point on, he used both legs. Started putting weight on his bad knee. Started making it work. 3 or 4 months later, he didn't have knee issues. See, what my friend was doing was actually making the injury worse by immobilizing it. Because the way that tissue and ligaments and tendons heal themselves is through blood flow. That's why the hardest place to recoup if someone gets really bad injury to their lower back or their spinal erectors. That's mostly tendons. There's not a lot of blood vessels. It's hard to get a lot of blood flow into that area, no matter what you do. Things like a reverse hyper help it a lot. Very light good mornings would help it a lot. But the worst thing, guys, that you can do if you get injured is to go into, I'm going to baby it to death. So when I do exercises now, and there's a lot of exercises I find I can do, it's really weird. I can do my back stuff just like I've never been injured. I can still deadlift like I've never been injured. I can squat with a safety squat bar like I don't have an injury. I can do biceps as heavy as I want, no problem whatsoever. But if I've got to do something that's going to isolate that tricep, there's just, it's not contracting enough to get strength in it yet. So through my research, what I figured out is somehow I stretched the nerve that comes out of the back through the shoulder joint, and it causes it to inflame. And it actually, there is a little, like, think of it like an electrical wire with plastic coating on the outside. And that gets kind of stretched so it's not there. So the electrical charge that goes down to my tricep that tells it to extend or contract is not functioning correctly. Well, what's the best way to actually get nerves to regenerate? Blood flow, and believe it or not, magnesium. Magnesium, the mineral, actually has a lot to do with repairing nerve damage. So guess what? I'm taking quite a bit of magnesium every day, and every day I force blood into where the injury is at. Now, in my everyday life, since I started doing this, me just going about my daily life, no one would know that I had an injury. There's a few weird positions I get my shoulder in that I'll recognize it, or if I've got to push off with just a tricep or do something that my chest needs to contract, it doesn't work right. But the way the body works, it's really cool. It figures out a way to still do the motion anyway. Not the best way, but it's a way. So what if you get an injury? You hurt your knee. Now, I'm not talking about you tore your ACL and you need a surgery and you don't get it fixed and you're just going to keep putting blood in there. That's probably pretty stupid. Or if you tear a tendon off in your shoulder or chest, you need to get it fixed, but then you need to start making it work within a few days. Not giving doctor's advice. This is a little bit of my experience and a whole lot of people with a lot more experience. If you'll do that, you'll get the blood flow. Your body will start healing itself if it can, depending on how bad the damage is, and it doesn't get messed up. Why am I saying this? I talk to people all the time. Well, I've got a weak back. It hurts. Well, they don't say I have a weak back. I've got a hurt back, and it hurts if I do anything or I've got to lift. Do you know what those people should be doing? Lifting. See, when you do what you suck at, you get better at it. A strong back is way more functional than a weak back. And a weak back that's hurt and babied becomes weaker and weaker and weaker and more susceptible. Just like knees, ankles, elbows, shoulders, spinal cord, neck. Because I'm almost willing to bet most people that have any type of neck injury are told never to do anything where they train their neck, which makes no sense to me whatsoever. None. They don't want to ever have their back in any position where it's not perfect. That's not how life works, guys. That is not how life works. If someone hands you a baby and it falls between you and the other person, are you just going to let it hit the floor because you don't have your back in the correct position? No, you're going to catch the baby. Or if you slip and you've got to move your feet and twist your body so you don't fall down and crack your noggin, you're not going to be in the perfect position. You have to move. There's a saying in fitness, motion is lotion. The more movement that you have, the better things will work. And I do believe that's true. So if you're getting injured doing whatever, job, hunting, fishing, trapping, fall down, whatever it is, you need to be smart and you need to be logical about what you're doing. I can bench press a bar with my shoulder without causing on say like a pain level of 1 to 10. It's probably a 2. 2's not going to hurt me. Now, if it was an 8, I wouldn't be doing it. Now, an empty bar on an incline press puts that at a different angle. That's about a 6. I don't do that. 3 or 4 weeks, I'll try to do it again. If I can do it then, I'll start doing that. Overhead press. If my hands are in front of my body, it's not that big a deal. If they're out to my side, it's a big deal. So I'm constantly playing and testing and trying new motions as things heal to get better and to get more blood flow and to get more stability. One of the things that I'm going to do with my shoulder is down the road from me, and in this dip in the road, for some reason, someone thought it was a good idea to plant bamboo. I'm talking real bamboo, 40-foot bamboo, as big as a man's arm bamboo. So for the stability, which may be what I end up doing for the next 6 months, on pressing movements, is I'm going to take a saw down to that bamboo and I'm going to cut a straight piece of bamboo about 9 feet tall. I'm going to cut it off at the edges so it's not splintering, whatever that ends up being. I'm going to measure to the middle of that, get a center point. I'm going to measure out from that so I know where the rings are at if I had a regular powerlifting bar. And then I'm going to measure out from there where the collars would be if I had a regular bar. And I'm going to put 2 pieces of tape about 1/4 inch apart. Then I'm going to take my kettlebells, not heavy ones. I'll probably start off with 10s, 12s, something like that. I have to grab some of my wives. And I'm going to hang those on exercise bands, which could be bungee cords. And I'm going to bench press that, and I'm going to overhead press that. It's not going to be heavy. Bamboo doesn't weigh very much. I'm not going to put very much weight on there. But the kettlebells on the bands are going to be extremely unstable. They're going to go up and down. They're going to go sideways. They're going to try to go left and right. They're going to try to go at 45-degree angles. They're going to be popping up and down. And the goal is not to see how much I can bench press. Is to control that as I go down through the motion and force all those little muscles around my rotator cuff to get them back in shape to be able to support my shoulder. That's one of the things that you can do. If you're having knee problems, you can also use this thing to squat with. If you're having a lot of issues with your elbow, as far as you go to pick something up and it hurts right at your elbow, you can curl with this and you can do tricep extensions with this. It's a stability exercise. It's not a muscle growth exercise. It's a stability exercise. So when you go to put weight on a bar and if you're not stable, that's when you get hurt. There is a power lifter out of Texas that really screwed his shoulder up, tore his pec. He did all kind of, about everything go wrong, went wrong on, I think it was like a 700-pound bench press. For 1.5 years, everything he did with a barbell was a bamboo bar. Over time, he started adding more weight, more weight, more weight. Now, when you add more weight to a bamboo bar on bands, the stability gets way worse. Because it feels like two teenagers having a tug of war in opposite directions and trying to shake someone off a rope going across a pond. It's just going to be rocking back and forth. After he did all of that damage, he's back up to benching over 600 pounds. His doctor said he would never be able to do that type of training again with the damage that he had. The doctor wanted to put him in a cast keep him immobile, not lift anything over 20 pounds, pretty much forever. And he went, that's not the best way to handle this. So if you're injured, whatever it is, two things to keep in mind. Blood flow is king. If you can do a motion with whatever's injured, do it to the point to where the pain start actually becoming pain. Not just a tad bit discomfort, but actually where it starts hurting, then you back yourself off. And you want to do a lot of reps. You're not trying to do 8 or 10 repetitions on something. You want to do 20 or 25 or 30 at a whack. You want to get as much blood flow into the injury as you can. Then you need to take some time, and there's some good books out there, Supple as a Leopard and Rebuilding Milo are two books that I highly recommend. If you have any type of bodily injury, regardless if you weight train or not, you will probably understand your injury after you self-diagnose or the way these books are written, then your doctor's going to be able to explain to you. But more importantly, it's going to take you from ground zero of being a weakling to get back to where you were. That's your back, your neck, your joints, everywhere. Muscle tears, everything. Both those books are amazing. Supple Like a Leopard and Rebuilding Milo. That's pretty much what I want to talk about today, because part of life is getting injured. We're all going to get injured. Now, I've had people say to me at 53, getting ready to be 54, aren't you afraid of getting hurt? Well, you know, my wife has got a torn ACL right now that she's probably going to have to get surgery on here in a couple of months. And she wasn't exercising very much at all. She did a little bit of walking. Actually, she tore her meniscus and her ACL and was not doing anything extreme. We don't even know how she did it. I know all kind of people with jacked up backs that don't do any weight training. I know guys with bad shoulders. I know guys with bad ankles that don't do training. If you're gonna live and not be in a bubble, you're gonna get hurt. There's nothing you can do about it. The difference is how you handle it. Is that now gonna be your identity? Are you going to look at yourself as a victim? Are you now, for the rest of your life, going to use that as an excuse for everything? And unfortunately, most people do. Or are you going to put on your big boy underwear, logically attack and work the problem, and become stronger after than you were before? Because scar tissue is stronger than the original tissue. Let that sink in for a second. How you handle an injury is what your outcome is going to be. If you allow your injury to define who and what you can do, you're going to be that. Well, I can't. I got a bad back. I can't. I've got a bad back. I just can't lift that. I got a bad back. I can't work anymore. I've got a bad back. But you know, very rarely, besides taking pills, that I hear any of these people saying is I'm doing something about it. Hardly ever. And they get weaker and weaker and weaker. Now, you can make that choice to be you, or you can make that choice to become stronger. And I don't see how a man can look yourself in the mirror and go, I think I'm just going to choose to be a weakling for the rest of my life because I don't want to do anything that's exercise or training or stretching or mobility work or anything like that. Now, most people don't say that in a conscious way when they look in the mirror. They go, woe is me. Everybody gets hurt. Get over it. You're not special. Do what you need to do so you can be the best man that you can be, which is why I think strength training should be part of every man's routine. I've said it over and over again. The stronger a tissue is and the stronger your ligaments and tendons are, the less injuries you're going to get. And the more functional you're going to be in life. It's never a bad thing to be too strong, but it can be disastrous if you're too weak. Blood flow and range of motion is your friend. Immobility is not. Now, there's going to be some people, I'm going to end with this, there's going to be some people that go, well, I had a car wreck, or I had this, or I had, okay, that could be a little bit different. But are you doing anything to fix it? Are you doing anything to make it stronger? The answer to that normally is no. There is no doubt there's going to be things that's going to happen to you. You may have to go under the knife. Okay. Well, when you're out of that operation, what are you doing? I'm not talking about going out and do stupid stuff that you're just going to re-injure yourself. I'm talking about figure out what it is you can do and keep doing it. That's what I'm referring to. How you handle that injury, whatever it is going to determine the outcome that you have from getting that injury. Stronger or weaker. Do the right thing. Blood flow, mobility, range of motion. If you do that, I think you're going to be pretty happy. All right, guys, I'm not going to have a show next week. I've got something going on, which I'm sure I'll talk about when we get back with this. It's just, it's going to be pretty much an impossibility for me to upload where I'm going to be. So I hope y'all have a great week. Look at yourself every day. How can you be a better man? How can you be stronger physically and mentally? How can you be more humble? How can you help out those people around you and do the things that make men men and be proud of it? And I'll talk to y'all later.